Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of consciousness. And that is not a recent thing. It's an ongoing, I would say, situation of humanity, the constant striving for more harmony, more perfection, more love, more open, abundance, all those things that human beings have wanted throughout the ages. And there's a science to that. I mean, if you've been listening to this program, you know that, but we also are investigating the sciences to the evolution of consciousness. And that is why I'm talking today to Stephen Post. He is a master feng shui expert. He's part of the Open Center Feng Shui School. He'll be doing a big ceremony in a blessing in Central Park and on June 16th, so we'll be talking about that. But welcome, Stephen, to the program.
Thank you so much, Alan.
Would you say that feng shui is a science, or was I just making that up?
I think it really represents some of the earliest scientific thinking. Joseph Needham called it seminal in the creation of science in China. And so it's both a science as well as an art.
Right. So let's talk about, feng shui, as I understand it, in a basic level, it starts with your home and the way things are arranged in your home, the way they set up, somehow has an influence. But that's a very simplistic approach. How would you define it?
Well, I would describe feng shui more as the relationship between people, places, and the universe. And to create a harmony between those three levels of being certainly includes adjusting your home. It may include adjusting yourself, and it can also include adjusting the bigger environment like a city.
So how does that work, though? How do these elements affect us? That's what I'm always trying to understand about feng shui. Why does it work? How does it work? What's it based on?
I would say that feng shui, of course, is an art of creating the most desirable conditions for living and for working and for wish fulfillment. Some of the principles that contribute to feng shui's claims to achieve the comfort of success include the understanding of the relationship between an individual life, an individual qi, the environments in which that individual attempts to flourish, and the bigger universe. Chinese culture traditionally speaks of heaven, human, and earth, a Confucian trinity. And so the relationship between these three and their similar functioning and conditioning is one contribution to feng shui's effectiveness.
But the effectiveness, you're a master. You've been studying this for, 20-something years, right?
Oh, I would say more like 65 years now, since I began as a tiny child in New York City and had some experiences that are completely coincident with about 50 years of formal feng shui study. So it's been completely in unity with my own life path.
Right. Mm. But it obviously works, or else it wouldn't be something that what are some of the things in your development that convinced you that this is a field you wanted to take seriously and study? What was it that got you on the path?
I was a little boy of 4 or 5 walking down the block in the Bronx from my parents' apartment to my aunt's house. And then in that location in the South Bronx, I saw the sun shining on a vacant lot. I had what I now know is called a classic extroverted mystical experience, kind of, Alan, like taking in the world. And I decided at that point that I would create a language which would not only describe but attempt to embody that experience. And so that's why I say I've been doing feng shui since 4 or 5. In my own development, I was also a student in New York City. The parks of New York were my great refuge. Many of the parks of New York include some of the most important geomantic or feng shui monuments in the city. And so the inspiration aspect of nature also was my guide. I was also a first-generation hippie present at the first Bien in New York, right near the Belvedere Castle, where we are having a blessing ceremony on Friday night, June 16th, and visiting that site again as part of an excursion after a class on the feng shui of New York City at the Open Center all day the 17th. And hippie background certainly contributed to my interest in energy and experience. And then in that very summer of love, I had the occasion to visit a sacred mountain just north of San Francisco, a mountain called Mount Tamalpais, widely regarded as a sacred mountain. And similar to the Belvedere Castle, it has a lookout at the top of it. Belvedere Castle at the top of Vista Hill, the high point in Central Park, was originally a lookout. And actually, I will be in service tomorrow in the lookout on the San Francisco area mountain, Mount Tamalpais, beginning my 47th year doing that. And when I first became fire lookout on Mount Tamalpais, I made a commitment to learn everything I could about feng shui, earth mysteries, geomancy, that kind of earth-based wisdom and knowledge. And after some years of scholarly work, I began teaching the first classes in feng shui in the U.S. And then I heard that a master was teaching, His Holiness Professor Lin Yun. I was in his very first class. When we bowed to each other, I knew I'd found a lifelong teacher, and I was fortunate to spend about 40 years at Professor Lin's right hand, and founded the New York Open Center Feng Shui Professional Training with two colleagues at Professor Lin's direction and under his supervision. So these have been some of the seminal things that led me into this lifelong path.
Okay, thank you. You're talking about your lookout tower and Mount Tamalpais and why it's a sacred mountain. So please continue.
Right. I was associating the Belvedere Castle, which originally in 1842 was a lookout, with and was in my life the precursor of now 47 years in service at a sacred mountain just north of San Francisco. And was telling a little bit about my background in feng shui. And I mentioned that when I first became fire lookout on this sacred mountain just north of San Francisco, I made a commitment to learn whatever I could about feng shui, geomancy, earth mysteries, and this kind of earth-based wisdom and knowledge. I'm not quite sure at what point we were cut off in the broadcast, but I had commented on an experience at the age of 4 or 5 in New York City in the Bronx, a classic extrovert of mystical experience, which led me to create a language which sought not only to describe but embody that experience. And thus we could say I've been on a feng shui path for about 65 years. I'd mentioned being a first generation hippie in New York City at the first Beans, exactly at the Belvedere Castle in Sheep Meadow below, and how this was a spiritual influence, the importance of Mount Tamalpais in my life, and then meeting His Holiness, Professor Lin Yun, with whom I had the opportunity to be at his right hand for about 40 years, and at whose direction I and two colleagues formed the feng shui professional training we still have at the New York Open Center.
Right, and that is one of the reasons you'll be in New York, is to be a part of that program, to start to
yes,
teach
indeed.
The program.
Indeed, we have our fourth session of the year in our three-year program coming up the week after the blessing and class on the feng shui of New York, the 16th and 17th of June.
Right, but can we just get back a little bit to the basics of feng shui?
Yes.
Because it's something I do feel, of course, it works, and it wouldn't be in existence for 5,000 years or whatever if it hasn't worked. But how does it work? How do the energetics of a place affect the person and destiny?
Yes, indeed. Now, I'm not sure if the listeners have heard some of this earlier or if it was cut off, but I commented on the Confucian trinity of heaven, human being, and earth, and the similar functioning and conditioning of the big cosmos of the human being and its and the relationship of the two to the places where we live and work and abide. And so that similar functioning and conditioning allows a relationship such if we adjust the environment, we're affected, and the universe is as well. And so that's one fundamental principle. Of course, feng shui utilizes other principles, especially the relationship of energy and wisdom, and something that is a kind of uncommon sense, such that in an environment, we understand what segments of the environment affect given areas of life. And also, we appreciate that most effective is if we both change our environment so that they're more supportive, but at the same time, not forget to change ourselves. And this adjustment of person, this adjustment of place, also has a bigger benefit in a more universal adjustment. One of the reasons why a blessing method is so powerful is that if we take a place where energy is gathered and also can be transmitted, like this high point in Central Park with the special Belvedere Castle that the creators of Central Park, who are Anglophiles, created, paralleling the fortresses that the British had created to observe Napoleon's fleets. If we do something special in such a place, it is projected, it is radiated throughout the city. One reason why Belvedere Castle in Central Park is so important is that it is what we would call the Taiji, or central position, for the city. Central Park is central, and the very center of Central Park and its high point, Belvedere Castle, has great power. How does it have that power? Well, one might say, why not do a blessing at a taller skyscraper? But the skyscrapers are all kind of packed together, either in southern Manhattan or Midtown, because the geology supports such structures. However, in Central Park, there is scope for an action to spread. And this really goes to one of the core concepts of feng shui, but even the knowledgeable listeners may not be familiar with, because we can distinguish between form, like that tall hill, and the dimension of its influence, which in Chinese is called su. It represents the envelope of power that surrounds such a special site. And so if we do the right kind of blessing at such a special site, it has the ability to influence more broadly the very nature of the city as a whole. And so that's one reason why this site has been chosen for a very special blessing activity, in which we remove negative imposition, plant seeds of growth, and then elevate the vital energy of the city. These are the stages of the blessing we're planning on.
Well, so you're saying, say it's magic, but it has elements of metaphysical spirituality. What is the right blessing? What does that mean? The right blessing.
Well, of course, we can remember the great Oglala Sioux Black Elk statement, every step a prayer. So hopefully we're conducting blessings every moment in our lives, or certainly throughout the day. But when I say the right blessing, or a right blessing, certainly there can be many blessings, and I'll be combining our Chinese feng shui blessing from the tradition of Professor Lin Yun, with the participation of other religionists, including some marvelous sisters who will be participating, a representative of the Zen tradition, and other clergy and religionists. And so that shared intention certainly counts for a lot, nor am I claiming that there is only one right way to bless, far from it. However, if we do a blessing where we address any blocking factors, any negative forces, any imposition on a site first, and if then we are able symbolically to plant seeds of auspicious development and visualize them sprouting and flowering and fruiting to their culminating benefit, and further, if we can lift the chi and make it rising, this done at a site where the chi is already excellent and rising and bountiful is a skillful way of making a contribution to the city's benefit. And so that gives some sense of what would constitute a right blessing without presuming that there's only one type of right blessing.
So you're saying a right blessing, first of all, has to have the intention of the highest benefit.
I think so, yes, and also to take advantage of a place that can utilize the blessing and spread its force.
Right, but the specifics of that is what? I mean, what exactly are you doing?
Well, we'll be doing a very special but simple blessing using water. Because of the Central Park's Conservancy's rules, we're limited to using something that produces no permanent impact. Normally, we would use rice mixed with special ancient chemicals and high-proof liquor. But in this case, to match the requirements of the Central Park Conservancy, will be using blessed water. And indeed, as we know from all the work that's been done on water in recent years, how we treat the water, whether it's playing Mozart, which has been shown to change the molecular structure of water, or in this case, putting prayers into the water, that water becomes a vehicle that can express not only intention, but positive energy in a very direct manner. So there'll be a process of doing a traditional blessing, technically called the Yui Tiao Chi, the adjustment of the external chi of the site, but here using water rather than the traditional rice and cinnabar and liquor, etc.
Well, if you were to use the cinnabar and rice and liquor, would it be more powerful? I mean, what is the purpose of those elements?
Well, everything has its rationale and logic, and there's certainly long historical precedents and understanding for the use of those materials. But at the same time, water used in blessings is found all over the world, from the holy sacred water of Roman Catholicism to great compassion water of my root Buddhist tradition, to the use of water in the magnificent ceremonial practices of Bali and of many other places. So I consider water to not be a lesser blessing material than cinnabar, rice, and liquor. Those have their meaning and rationale and their concrete physicality, but I think we'll do just fine using blessed water.
And this is a blessing will be June 16th this year, 2017. Is everyone invited to gather at the Belvedere Castle?
Well, our permit provides for those who have registered for the class on the 17th to get specific instructions as to time and to participate in a formal way. But if people are present at this area early evening on the 16th, any New Yorker who wishes to attend, I think, would not be prohibited from doing so. And so I hope I'm expressing myself appropriately relative to the standards that we've been given. So I would welcome people attending, although I don't think that I should give the specific time because that is theoretically limited to those who have registered for the class. So I'm kind of a mixed answer, but sufficient such that those who are interested, I think, could benefit.
Well, I just say if people want to register, is this an ongoing course? Because I think the course is on the Open Center website if people were going to...
If people visit the opencenter.org website, they will certainly very easily find a listing for Feng Shui New York City and Blessing for the City of New York. It's right in the Open Center online catalog.
Now, getting back... Yes, Open Center online catalog. You can register for this very special blessing. Will this blessing send a protective energy around New York? What does a blessing actually do?
Well, there are different stages, but in the final stage, there'll be a process of both making the chi more uplifted, more rising, but at the same time, creating what we can call an umbrella of protection that will extend very broadly. If our intention is strong and universal, it's something that can affect all of New York.
Is this something everybody should do in their home as well? I mean, with different specifics, but is this something you recommend to everyone?
I think that if people engage in blessing activities that are coordinate with their own beliefs, their own root religious traditions, their own understanding and skillfulness, that in general, to bless a home in whatever manner and according to whatever doctrine or religious tradition can be extremely effective. If we bring a spiritual impetus to bear on the mundane dimension of our life, we elevate that mundane dimension to a more universal dimension. So whether you bless your food, whether you love each other, whether you use a formal feng shui blessing or the blessings of any of the religious traditions, these can be immensely strong in unifying people with the places of their lives and transforming that place into an environment that much more will support people's wishes and aspirations as well as mundane needs. So, yes, I certainly encourage all the listeners to bless as much as they can.
But isn't there something special? I mean, not to say it's better than anything else, but something special about a feng shui blessing?
Of course,
tell me about that. What is it that's special?
Well, I think that these blessings are designed to most strongly affect the location and the broader environment that they engage with. And so our process of understanding how to remove negative energy, to satisfy opposing conditions, our ability to do what is called plant lucky fields, to create with visualization and in intention, and in this case, with the water that we'll bless and use, a process where we visualize and imbue an environment with wish-fulfilling characteristics. And finally, in the third stage of the formal blessing that we'll be doing, if we can make the chi more rising, more inspirited, more elevated, and combine that elevation with a sense of a protection, like an umbrella protecting the site. Of course, a formal blessing based on long experience and traditional practice has its special characteristics. But at the same time, I would not ignore the great benevolence of what we can call the way of good wishes. So even an uneducated good wish has power that I respect. So yes, of course, formal, technical, traditional methodologies exist because they're time-tested and powerful, but blessing in general at the same time has its value.
Well, what, without giving away any secrets, unless of course you want to give away some secrets, how do you make the chi rise like that, you know?
Well, elevating the chi has to be, there are different stages of utilizing the blessing substance, in this case water. The first would be to feed the opposing forces and to satisfy them. The second would be to seed the environment with the sowing of blessings, an agricultural metaphor, planting seeds of good luck. And the third stage of lifting the chi, elevating the chi, has to do with the way the substance is employed, in essence, being thrown upward in a special manner. And so each phase has its own effect.
Yeah. Why don't we, can we, if you don't mind, can we break down those phases? Because I think it's really interesting what you just outlined. So first phase is we have to feed the opposing forces. So yes, whatever negative energy is affecting, we have, talk about that. How do you feed that? And what's the purpose of feeding opposing forces?
Well, we can enlist what previously were negative, unhappy, in need, or factors and forces. And if such energy receives food, blessing, light, inspiration, it can be satisfied. And so the technical term for this kind of process is feeding the hungry ghosts. And so this opens a bigger subject that I'd like to take a moment to talk about, but I think it's on point with this feeding dimension. In some cultures, one preeminent example is Bali. People put offerings out before the midday meal and the evening meal on banana leaves in front of the house, at the crossroads, in other locations. And those are principally offerings for negative spirits, and are put there to satisfy them and to include them. And so, although, of course, life in Bali is modern life with good and bad and all of the variations that we experience as New Yorkers, at the same time, that level of inclusiveness is lacking in the modern world. And so I've often wanted to engage in a project, and maybe we can start it right here, of creating refuges, not for the human homeless, but for the spiritually homeless beings. Because if we create satisfaction among the roaming spirits that fill modern cities, we can, just by doing that, sweeten the life for all beings, certainly including the human beings. And so the first level that we're talking about relates to that level of pacifying, satisfying, pleasing, and enlisting for benefit those previously unsatisfied forces and factors. Comparable.
Right.
I was just going to
finish that. Sorry, you said to a.
Please go ahead, Alan. I'm sorry to have interrupted.
You finish. You said you're just going to compare it to what?
I was going to compare it to a situation where a human being makes friends, not just with the conscious self, but with the bigger self that the Tibetans call the La, the soul. And if you can engage all the factors of the unconscious, not just the positive ones, but everything in a unity and make friendship with it, of course, in an individual life, that has its benefit. And I would compare that inner psychological therapeutic practice to the effect environmentally of making friends with the less than positive invisible forces and factors. So that would be stage one.
Well, there's two types of these invisible forces. There's our own dark side projection, and there are, I'm sure, hungry ghosts that roam the city that are stuck in the hungry ghosts. So, how do you feed that? You don't want to encourage them sticking around. You want to have them move on, but.
Well,
what is the process of feeding those hungry ghosts? Yeah.
Well, there's a simple way of using water in what is called a feeding mudra or hand gesture. Those who are participants in the class and participate in the blessing will learn the technique. But that process of imbuing the substance that they will be fed, in this case, water, with the blessings of mantra, of prayer, of multiple religious traditions combining together at this blessing ceremony, is such that when the beings present, the roaming spirits, receive this, we'll call it food instead of water, they're satisfied. And then at that point, they have an opportunity, we could use the phrase, to go into the light, or if they stay, they stay not as desperate and needy beings, but as protectors and supporters. So whether they are liberated and depart, or whether they stay as protectors, their quality is now a different quality.
That's really fascinating. That's amazing. I guess you can work with haunted houses that way as well. You know,
sure.
Haunted.
This is more a process of ghost loving rather than ghost busting.
Right. That's great. So that's the first stage. You feed the hungry ghost. What was the second stage, you said, of this blessing?
It's called planting lucky fields, and it utilizes directed intention to plant energetic seeds of wish fulfillment, and we visualize in great detail those stages, to put it in the simple way, sprouting, flowering, and fruiting would be a way of describing how one visualizes.
And what exactly are you doing at Central Park with that? How do you do that?
Well, because we're selecting the taiji, or central position, where an action taken influences the whole, if we can, in all directions, plant such seeds of benefit, of spiritual seeds of benefit, well, the effect is to imbue to the ability that we can visualize the entire city with some of that quality. Of course, it doesn't mean that every negative is righted and that every wrong is corrected, but it does mean that through intelligent spiritual education and action, we can begin to create an impetus toward a sweeter, more spiritualized kind of living.
And okay, so, I understand. Yeah, yes. And so what? Yeah.
And so then the third stage of lifting the chi, well, of course, there are special ways of utilizing the water or the rice to do that. Again, combined with the power of intention. And so in this way, the chi of a place where it's already rising at Belvedere Castle can be augmented. So not only is it rising, but it's soaring. Not only is it lifted, but it's elevated. Not only is it powerful, but greatly powerful and greatly auspicious. So in connection with the general class, which will go into the real details of what distinguishes New York as a unique place and how we can maximize the impetus to success that New York City has by its very nature, the direction that my class will take is to indicate that not only are there sacred sites within the city, places of power like Vista Hill and Belvedere Castle, traditional explanations, traditional indigenous thinking, Native Americans would describe sacred sites as bright spots on a fawn's body, the fawn of the earth. Another traditional image from Celtic culture are bright spots on the body of a salmon as it eats the substances of wisdom in a special pool. And so this kind of idea of distinctive special places and the ability to utilize them is important. But ultimately, New York City itself can and should, in my view, be regarded as a sacred site. And part of the explanation that I will give is not only based on geology and the flow of energies, but also on the way the city developed, the way it's positioned in the broader landscape of the East Coast, its significance in terms of the history of the United States, where Masonic intelligence and skillfulness brilliantly began the creation of our country. And thank God they were so brilliant in their implementation of an intelligent plan for growing the United States. We see in the division of powers, for example, something that we very much need in terms of the political events of our time. And so all of these kind of elements will be dealt with and explained, at least their highlights in the class I'll give. And so an additional dimension is that if you understand what makes New York powerful, you can align yourself individually with those factors to improve your own power and your own bounty and fruitfulness.
Wow, that is fascinating. So does what makes New York powerful is the fact that it's an island, that the flow of chi surrounds it? I mean, can you give us a little bit about what makes New York powerful?
Well, I'll give a little. I'm not going to tell everything, but certainly New York is positioned, and I'll show how when we discuss its detailed feng shui and geography. It's like a doorway that says, come on in. It is indeed the principal mouth of chi, or doorway, for the United States. Of course, other locations like Washington, D.C., that's the governmental center. But the most important mouth of chi is New York City. Furthermore, our founders recognized that there's a potential for wisdom to imbue our action, that the deist's idea that people can participate in bringing the sacred into being is certainly given an emblem by the Statue of Liberty, which itself had a feng shui benefit for the city of New York. It's only after it was put up that Greater New York, including bringing Brooklyn into the city, occurred. So those kind of details will certainly be discussed in my class as well.
Well, the other thing, at the mouth of chi, by placing a goddess or a tribute to the feminine, welcomes more abundance. And isn't that also a purpose of the Statue of Liberty?
Absolutely, in my view, most certainly. And I would connect.
Right. So yes.
No, go ahead, Alan, please.
No. I'm just saying you would connect what?
Well, I certainly think that there's a unity between the goddess of liberty of the United States, and if we looked at in detail at Washington, D.C., all of the positionings of the constellation Virgo, symbolic of the great goddess as well, with our country's fate and fortune. So I put it in a simple way here, but I think that's a theme that we can explore very broadly. And I'll do so to a certain extent anyway in our class.
Would you say Virgo is the rising sign of the United States in that way?
Astrologically, not necessarily, but the goddess of liberty is an emblem that is certainly expressed by some of her forebears, including Virgo and Isis, and ultimately what we can call the goddess of the living waters.
And who is the goddess of the living waters?
She has many names, depending on the culture, we can actually trace her movement from the ancient Middle East all the way to Tibet. And so she has many names, including Isis and Anahita and Satrigarsangs in Inner Asia. And in the indigenous Tibetan tradition, she has three forms, a peaceful, semi-wrathful, and wrathful form. So I would just maybe make a concluding statement on this topic, that our founding fathers were great geniuses in applying some of these principles to creating our nation.
Right. And for actually just a little side note, as also creating their own individual fortune, someone pointed out to me that all the founding fathers built their homes on top of a mount, Monticello, Mount Vernon, there were all these there was all these maybe they didn't know the understanding of feng shui, but someone knew that little mounds created an access to power.
Yes. It's true, but of course it would need to be very much more nuanced. For example, Monticello is a wonderful feng shui structure, but it also has many faults that if we were doing a detailed analysis, I could show you how Jefferson's inheriting of his wife's debt and his financial difficulties throughout his life had something to do with some issues in the construction of Monticello and certain deficits connected with it. But at the same time, I do agree generally with what you said.
Well, you know, it's so fascinating the way you've laid this out. It makes me want to dive into feng shui and understand every little piece that's about it, you know?
Well, one of the great things about such an impulse is that it's never ending. Feng shui is a subject of such depth that I spent my life studying feng shui and I continue to learn every day. And so to be involved with a subject of such depth, of such nuance, and of such ability to improve our lives is a tremendous blessing that I delight in, of course.
Right. Well, I appreciate it. So let's go to the third part. I don't think you developed that. The third part of that New York City blessing is the rising chi. What is that happens there?
Well, you know, in a certain special manner, the water is hurled upward. And as it descends in a rain of blessings. In this case, quite a literal rain, since water will be involved. And that rain of blessings adds an enablement of success. And at the same time, if you know how to visualize, that rain of blessings is also an umbrella of protection. So blessing and protection are unified in this particular aspect of this traditional formal Chinese blessing.
And how long does this whole ceremony take?
Well, it could be done rapidly or at great length, but it'll be quite brief. I'm planning on about a 20-minute ceremony, something like that.
Oh, I see. One more thing. I'm sure there's things about directions and time of day and objects and color clothing. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, we're fortunate that June 16th is an auspicious day in the Chinese almanac. It happens to be my birthday as well. And then you raise the question of direction. And that's a vast topic in feng shui. Some traditions are very direction specific. The compass was created in China originally for feng shui, long before it was used for nautical science or navigation in general. At the same time, there are disagreements and differences about direction because every tradition represents a brilliant accommodation to its zone of origin. Some people speak of directions. Some people speak of forms. But the most important school of feng shui, said Guopo, who gave us the word feng shui, is not forms or directions, but the envelope of power. And so that's what we're focusing on in this blessing ceremony. And traditionally, the language of the forms of the earth and understanding that a high place has power is important. Sophistication as regards direction is important. In China, feng shui started in the northern plain of the Yellow River Valley, where all the hills go east-west in general, and where to face south in the winter is a matter of survival. In southern India, the Vastu Shastra or feng shui dimension traditions forbid facing south in the summer, and that's understandable. If you face south, you might become barbecue. When feng shui moved into western China, east-facing became more important. In the Greco-Roman geomancy that the listeners can read about in Vitruvius's 10 Books of Architecture, a Roman architect who wrote about Greco-Roman geomancy, other traditions are followed. But I would just, again, repeat that forms are important, directions are important, but even more important is to understand how to use the envelope of power of your home or of a city like New York for benefit.
Right. Just getting back to the history and the comparative culture, it seems to me, from what I've studied, I mean, you're, of course, an expert, but the laws of feng shui arose out of a very, not just environment, but a very different philosophical tradition than the Vastu of India. You know, they're very different conceptually, and they don't really match that way.
Well, I don't fully agree. I think they are directionally different in their emphasis, but there are tremendous regularities and similarities between all of the feng shui dimension systems around the world that I think are more important than their differences. And while metaphors and descriptive language may vary, in many cases, the understanding is actually the same. Example, in Chinese feng shui, there is a distinction between the money bag shape that will bring you good fortune, collect benefit, and the dustbin shape that will sweep your wealth away. Exactly the same shapes are understood in Vastu traditions, but with different terms. The money bag shape is the cow that will give you milk. The dustbin shape is the lion that will eat you up. So I think that that dimension of different metaphors, but a similar understanding, is more important overall than the differences that do exist system to system.
That is interesting, because I thought there was a total different belief from Vastu about directions for wealth and health and happiness.
Yes, about directions. And these are based on the zones of origin, where each system is a brilliant response to the environmental conditions. So different as far as direction, but not different as far as goal and meaning, and certainly with great commonality in terms of blessing methods as well.
You know what I would love to do when you're in New York? I'd love to sit down and do an on-camera video with you. So maybe we could do that, okay?
Absolutely. I'd love to do that.
Okay, because we have another like 8 minutes here. So let's just talk about the course that you're offering at the Open Center.
Yes, indeed.
And if, why it's so important, yeah.
Well, if the listeners will visit opencenter.org, they'll find a description of this class, which includes the blessing ceremony for the city of New York, but also explores the nature of New York's feng shui. New York is certainly characterized in a couple of different ways. On the one hand, New York City is the Big Apple, typified by constant reinvention, and by at the same time the greatest extremes. It's the Big Apple of hope, of potential. People come from all over the world, and they're maybe drive a taxi cab, and their children have a better life. On the one hand, and at the same time, we have the greatest extremes. Jefferson stated in a less kind way than I'll indicate here, that New York included all the depravity of human nature. So we have a city where we have the greatest extremes, good and bad. And to understand why that's the case, why the city is the Big Apple, how we can draw upon its power for individual benefit and also for a better life for the people, is among the topics of my class. You know, urban feng shui itself, which began in northern Iraq and Syria, the earliest cities, the basic idea is urban center as cosmic center. And so that dimension of the bigger characteristic of New York as a cosmic center is yet another way in which we can think of the city itself as special and perhaps sacred. And if we understand what features are most important in a city and understand how they're utilized, that becomes a guide not only for intelligent choices in urban planning, but for intelligent individual choice as well. So I would say that New York City... Go ahead.
No, wait, no, finish. When you would say New York City is what? Because, we just want to finish that, please. Yeah.
I would say that New York City is an urban center, which is also a cosmic center, and its remarkable dynamic of reinvention, of elevated chi, of constant transformation is especially expressed in the details of urban feng shui knowledge when we look at the most important features of the city. So, of course, I'll go into that in the class in a lot of detail.
Well, let me just explain what you mean by a cosmic center. What does that word mean to you, cosmic?
All right. The earliest cities of the Fertile Crescent were built according to an agricultural motif. The city walls were plowed, literally, and so they were growing a city. But they also, in the center of the city or in the key place in the earliest cities, that's where they put the ziggurat, which represents the world mountain. And so that clearly indicates that they were thinking of urban center as cosmic center. So that's the very nature of the feng shui of cities. And how we develop this is at the core of whether a city succeeds or fails. And often there are telling indications. For example, in the Lebanon, the city of Beirut, in the late 1960s, people began to erect structures whose only purpose was to block the view of a neighbor of the Mediterranean. They were called spite houses. An intelligent feng shui analyst might have looked at such occurrences and predicted that things would get very worse after that, which of course did occur. So the specific analysis of the features of a city and the knowledge of how to best improve them is certainly something that can be applied to any city and certainly to New York.
So you think like getting the obelisk from Egypt, putting that in Central Park, building the Empire State Building at 34th Street, created stabilities of citadels that became ways of uplifting the city.
Right. I think that the New York skyscrapers are the equivalent of mountains and certainly elevate the vital energy of New York.
What were you saying?
Well, I was thinking of the World Trade Center destruction and then revival with the present structure. And it's very interesting. Right after the attack, Professor Lin gave a class in New York on this topic. I flew in. I think there were only two or three passengers on the airline. Each passenger was given a bottle of champagne to thank them for flying with that airline. And Professor Lin actually had pointed out years before, after that first attack on the trade centers, that in his eye, those two towers looked like memorial candles. And he predicted a difficult outcome and was proven right. And hopefully the current structure, as well as all the care that's been given to memorializing the events, serves to once again elevate the chi of New York. And very interestingly, Professor Lin Yun in that class, within about a little more than a week after the attack, suggested having two bright lights shine upward into the sky, symbolic of the missing towers. And of course, we know that was done. And so now we're at a point where we do have the one large structure and the ongoing development of that area. And very interestingly, the area near Battery Park City, where the World Center is, and also the core or original heart of New York down by Wall Street, have become interestingly more complex. For example, the Wall Street area, as it has become more mixed in its use, not just financial institutions, but residences. If you go there, you'll notice many little pocket parks and a greater relational intensity, really similar to the greater relational intensity of a mature ecosystem. So this both illustrates how cities develop and also how the chi or vital energy of cities is always changing. Let me just add that one illustration of that is the remarkable development in Brooklyn and in Queens of waterfront areas, including the new State Park in Queens, that show this greater level of relational intensity, replacing the industrial use of the waterfront with a more human-based amenity that has certainly, I think, improved life for New Yorkers and also is illustrative of how the chi doesn't remain one way. It's constantly evolving and changing. One of the themes that we need to look at for the future of New York as well.
Well, this is fascinating, the feng shui of New York. I definitely want to sit down and do a whole interview with you. Thank you for tonight and your insights and your inspiration. I will be there at Belvedere Castle for sure. So I recommend other people registering, go to the Open Center catalog, opencenter.com, I think, online.
Opencenter.org. I encourage those who are
interested
to join us, and also to invite the listeners to add your own power to this blessing process, both on the 16th and on the 17th, but as well in a more ongoing way. Right-minded, well-meaning people of spiritual power combined together can create a better, sweeter life for New York City and, in the end, for the world. So please come to my class, participate in the blessing, and keep going in this direction afterward.
Thank you, Stephen. I'm talking to Stephen Post, who teaches the feng shui at the Open Center and is doing a special blessing June 16th at Belvedere Castle. Find out about that at opencenter.org. I'm Alan Steinfeld.
Alan, if I may, I'd just like to give an e-address for me if anyone would like to communicate with me. You can write me at GEO, F is in Frank, S is in Sam, GEOFS at PacBell, PacBell.net. GEOFS at PacBell.net and opencenter.org. Looking forward to seeing some of the listeners at these events. Thank you, Alan, very much.
I really enjoyed it. I'm sorry that the internet connection wasn't a little better because I didn't hear every single word, but I will listen to it again and definitely talk to you in person. And thank you for your time, Stephen, and good luck with this blessing.
Thank you so much, Alan. And every good wish for the city of New York and its people. And I trust New Yorkers will hear our words and act accordingly. Thank you so much.
And then next time we'll get into the feng shui of other cities, the feng shui of San Francisco. I'm sure you're there for a reason.
Yes, indeed. Right? I teach a class called Dragons in the Bay on the feng shui of the Bay Area. And I'm very interested in the feng shui of the United States and also the feng shui of the fate of nations. So thank you, Alan.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Stephen. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you have any more comments or questions, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net.